That. Somebody sent me this week, and I thought I'd share this with you here. It says, our teacher asked what my favorite animal was, and I said, fried chicken. She said I wasn't funny, but she couldn't have been right because everyone else laughed. You see, that was my problem in school. The teacher would say, that's not funny, Greg. But I'd say, but I beg to differ. Everybody else is laughing. But that's another story. But anyway, my parents told me to always tell the truth. I did. Fried chicken is my favorite animal. I told my dad what happened. And he said my teacher was probably a member of PETA. He said they love animals very much. I do too, especially chicken. Anyway, my teacher sent me to the principal's office. I told him what happened, and he laughed too. Then he told me not to do it again. The next day in class, my teacher asked me what was my favorite live animal. I told her it was a chicken. She asked me why, so I told her it's because you could make them into fried chicken. She sent me back to the principal's office. He laughed and told me not to do it again. I don't understand. My parents taught me to be honest, but my teacher doesn't like it when I am. Today, my teacher asked me to tell her what famous person I admired the most. I told her Colonel Sanders. Guess where I am now? Well, guess where Jonah is? Just where we left him last week, in the belly of a great fish. If you were not with us last week, we began our story of going through the story of Jonah. And not because you've probably never heard the story before, it's probably one of the most widely told stories from the Bible. So just about everybody has heard this story at one time or another. That's not why we're studying it. The reason we're studying it is because we can learn and get so many answers from this one account that is in God's holy word. We learn what Jonah learned. You know, Jonah was the most famous runner that's mentioned in the Bible, running from God because of his disobedience. And we learn that we're all runners at one time or another. Maybe somebody's running right now from God. We run, you say, how do you know you're running? Well, we run from God when we know what we should do, we know what God's calling us to do, but we choose to do something else. We just say, not now. We're just not going to do it. We're just not going to get on in step with God. You know, some people run from God and they plan it. You think that sounds crazy, but some of you have done this. I know I have. We will go through a period in our life and we'll say, I'm going to run from God until. And we'll say, I'm not going to walk with God during high school. Now, when high school's over, because there's so much fun stuff I want to do there, then I'll walk with God. But until then, I'm just going to put him on the back bumper. College, wait till I get out of college because there's so many wild oats I want to sow in college. Or I'm going to wait till after I get married. Then I'll walk with God. I'm going to quit running then. Or when I have children, then I will walk with God. You know, you don't have to be a bad person or a person who doesn't believe in God to run from God. Like I said, sometimes we do those things as we're just putting God on the back burner. We're not going to listen to him just now. Now, Jonah learned something that if we can learn this, we're doing very well. Jonah learned that you can run from God, but you can't outrun God. Now, this is not about payback. It's not about catching you doing something. You can't outrun God because he loves you so much. He's going to be there. He's going to be in a place that's prepared for you before you ever get there. He's going to put those obstacles in the way that'll get your attention, get you turning back to him. So you can't outrun God. You know, that's the second great thing we learn from this story of Jonah, is we learn the character of God. This story told over 2,700 years ago, it shows the nature of God. You can't outrun God. And this is where we left Jonah last week. God comes to Jonah, says, I want you to go up to Nineveh in the kingdom, the nation of Assyria, and I want you to preach to those people, warn them of their coming disaster because they're such sinful people. But Jonah went down to Joppa, got on a ship, and headed to Tarshish. And that's where our modern-day Spain is located. And this was, from what I understand, the furthest shipping route that you could go on. So he was going as far away from obeying God as he possibly could go. He didn't put up an argument to God. He didn't have a theological or philosophical debate with God. He just said, no, I don't want to go. We've done that. If I can speak to the smokers or former smokers or, I'm not picking on you. It's just a good example of something here. You know, how many times does a loved one come to you and say, you know you need to quit smoking? Yes. You know it's bad for you? I know. It would save you a lot of money? Oh, I know. Your clothes wouldn't smell like smoke? I know. We really want you to quit? I know. Are you going to quit? No. Yeah. And we've done that. If I can go to another side and say, don't you think you ought to go to the doctor? Yeah. Are you feeling bad? Yeah. It's been a long time since you've been to the doctor? Yeah. Don't you think you ought to get that checked out? Yeah. You mean to make your appointment? No. You know, we do those kind of things. And that's what Jonah did here. He didn't put up an argument. He has just decided he wasn't going to go along with God. Now, here's the one thing we're going to learn, or one of the major things we're going to learn this week from this story of Jonah. And that God is generous with his grace and thorough with his discipline. God is generous with his grace and thorough with his discipline. See, that's where we differ from God. We want God to be full of grace, just all grace. Keep forgiving, keep making everything right again. Go ahead, just keep on all grace, keep showering us with good things. But see, God isn't all grace, God is all love. And if he's all love, it can't just be grace. There must be discipline as well. So he's thorough in his discipline because he loves us. The last verse of chapter 1 in Jonah, and we're going to spend all our time in Jonah if you want to turn there, or you can follow along on the screen. Last verse where we left off last week, Jonah chapter 1 verse 17 says this. But the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and 3 nights. And now we're going to go into chapter 2, and chapter 2 is like a journal, a diary, the memoirs of Jonah that he writes when he gets out of the fish of what he thought and what was on his heart while he was there. Now, I absolutely love this next verse. Jonah chapter 2, verse 1 says this. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. And to that, I would say, I bet he did. I bet he did. You know, you get swallowed by a fish, you're going to do some soul searching. You're going to cry out to God. So, I think that's the greatest understatement in the Bible there. Look at verse 2. He says, in my distress, I called to the Lord. Every runner discovers this. Every runner discovers this, that in our distress, when our backs are against the wall, we cry out to God. We learn that all of us runners, we should have t-shirts made that just says, in my distress, I called to the Lord. We should have necklaces made, bumper stickers that say that, because that's the anthem of a runner. In my distress, I called to the Lord, because we all do it at some time or another. Let's be honest, for many of us, if you had not prayed to God in so long, maybe, who knows, months, years, decades, you'd not turn to God. It was when your life was in distress, when you were in turmoil, that's when you cried out to God. That's when you turned back to God. It's when your life was, your back was against the wall. And it was at that time that when, no matter what excuses you've been making all up to that time, the justifications you had in your mind, like, well, I'm not going to follow God. I don't believe in God. I don't believe he expects this. It's in our distress that we overcome all of those excuses that we've been making. You see, our circumstances override our objections eventually. Our resistance is pushed to the side. Look at verse 2 again. In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. Maybe that's what needs to go on the shirt. And he answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. This is the great news that Jonah learns here. But you got to remember, Jonah is in real time here. He's in the belly of a fish. He doesn't know he's getting out in 3 days. So he's crying out to God here, and he knows eventually God listened to him. You see, the good news is that God listens to the desperate cry of desperate people in desperate circumstances. Even if those circumstances are of our own making, trouble that we've caused, despite our objections and despite of feeling unworthy to go to God in those hours, you know, we say, I can't go to God because I've ignored him so long. We cry out to God, he listens. Even though we say, I can't ask God one more time for a second chance because this is the 100th second chance I've asked for, God listens. And Jonah learns that. It's a constant invitation hymn that God plays to our hearts. Verse 3, you hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas, and the current swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. He says, you did this. He says, it's not the sailors, it's not the captain of the ship who threw me in. He says, God, you did this. You're the one who brought these circumstances about. I know now that you're the one who did these things and brought them about. Remember a few weeks ago when we were preaching through the studying through the series, Recovery, the Road to Recovery? And one of the things we said, if we're ever going to recover from anything in our life, we have to be honest. We have to have that soul-searching look deep inside and be honest while we're in that situation. We got to stop playing the blame game, you know, those type of things. You just got to be honest and say, why am I where I'm at? We call that a fearless moral inventory. That's where Jonah's at now. He's looked deep inside, and he's not making any excuses. Look at verse 4. I said, I've been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. I've got to ask this question. At what point do you think Jonah repented for disobeying the Lord? I think it was the third day in the fish, second day, afternoon of the first day. How about when they went, one, two, throw him over? I guarantee you, if it wasn't when they threw him over, because he may have been expected to die right then, but when you get swallowed by a fish, it's going to get your attention. I don't think it needed 3 days to get Jonah's attention for him to repent. I remember as a kid, and I won't tell you some of the things my sister and I used to do to each other because there are children present, and I know you don't want to give them any ideas. But we fought, and we did things, and we knew how to push each other's buttons, and we just knew how to make our mother's life just miserable for our constant going at each other. But we knew the point when we crossed the line is when she went for the switch. My mother's weapon of choice was the switch. And so we knew when she got up or bolted out of that kitchen and went out that front door, because the bush was right out by the front steps, we knew she was going for a switch. Or when she went to that refrigerator, and on top of the refrigerator is where our fly swatter always stayed. We knew. You see, I was 9 years old before I figured out why they called it a fly swatter. Because I'd never seen her hit anything with it but me. Well, the fly swatter. And it was, oh, it's to kill flies. You know, but we knew when she went for that. Or maybe your dad or mom, you know, there was the belt. And I got that too. But, you know, when they would pull that belt out, the pop, 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 coming out of the belt loops, you know, I didn't need a spanking then. I repented. I was a new man. I was ready to walk the narrow road then. You know, is when they get ready to do that, I repent right at that point because I know what's coming. But you know what would happen? I get the spanking anyway. You know, you'd get it anyway. And you say, why? Why would they do that? Because they knew, and we know, that rebellion leads to pain. And the sooner we learn that, the sooner that sinks into our hearts and our minds and our will, our attitudes, rebellion leads to pain, the better off we are. Rebellion leads to pain. To teach us the next time, to bring us back before we ever leave. That we have those scars, those memories, to remind us. You know, if you remember when you were young, and some of you are young going through these days now, but you remember when the first time that you were in love with someone, or at least you thought you were in love, you break up, and it hurts so bad. And you would say, well, why does it hurt so bad? And I think that's to remind you, be careful how you give your heart away. Be careful how you give your body away. How about when you get in debt? It's so easy to get in debt and so hard and painful to get out of debt. Why? Because it's there to remind us before we go buy that new car or go into debt. And it's going to hurt to get out of it again. Your reputation. Why is it so easy to lose your reputation over something you say or you do, but then it takes so long to get a reputation back? It's to remind us that, hey, watch what you say and do. It's going to take a long time to recover what you do. Our memory is aided by our scars. Listen to verses 5 and 6. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath me barred me in forever. You know, that's like I said, this is in real time. This is really happening. You know, that he's in the belly of a fish. He doesn't know he's going to get out. It's not like the cartoons and stuff that I watched growing up or I see them in books where Jonah's inside the fish and he lights a match, you know, to see what's going on in there. You know, it wasn't like that. He's engulfed by this. He's in the belly. So anything that fish is taking in, it swirls around him. He says, there's even seaweed wrapped around my head. This was terrible. This was miserable for Jonah to be in that situation. But God left him there. God sometimes leaves us in those circumstances to help us learn. When the Israelites, as a nation, Israel's a nation, disobeyed God and followed other gods, God warned them, and then they came in, they were conquered, they were carried in exile to other countries. I bet after 2 or 3 years, those people got it and said, hey, we'll never do that again. We got it, God. We're going to follow you. We're never going to go after false gods again. Now take us back. And God said, no, you got 70 years of this. Wow. Sometimes God is thorough in his discipline so that we learn. Look at verse 6 and 7. But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Now here comes this one, if we can learn this next thing, what Jonah learns and writes and says here in verse 8. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. Jonah describes the dilemma of every runner. What we face eventually, every one of us. When we have run from God, when we have put God back here so we can go out after the things out here, whether it's sowing the wild oats, whether it's pursuing popularity or power or whatever we're pursuing, and we've put God behind us and have left him there, and we go after, Jonah recognizes that sometime, some point, you're going to get it, and then that's when you're going to say, it wasn't worth it. Look at what I gave up. He says, you forfeit the grace that could have been yours. He says, you give up those things. They have no value. You see, we can't make God stop loving us, but we can put ourselves in a place where we forfeit the experience of his love, where we can't enjoy the love. The experience, it's just like any of us in an earthly manner. You know, you can have a mother who loves you, but if you remove yourself from her, if you sow those wild oats, you're out there and you're wild and you're worrying her to death and all of those things, you don't enjoy that relationship or that love because you've removed yourself. See, 2,700 years ago, Jonah spoke the words that are still on our lips today. That if we cling to those worthless idols, we'll forfeit the grace that could be ours. Verse 9 and 10, but I with a song of thanksgiving will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord, and the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. God knew that Jonah had come to that place where he waved the white flag. And he commanded that fish to vomit him up on dry land. Now as we go into chapter 3, verses 1 and 2 is where we'll end today. It says this, "Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you." And what do you think Jonah did? He listened. And I bet he did. But God gave him that second chance to do that. Look at what we've learned in just these two sermons here. We've looked at God's word. What we've just picked up, two beautiful things here. Number one, you can run from God, but you can't outrun God. And like, let me say it again. This isn't about payback. This isn't about punishment. This isn't about the gotcha. You can't outrun God because he loves you so much. He's going to go wherever you've been, wherever you're going. He's been there. He's going to be there to hear your cry. He took care of the payback and the punishment on Calvary 2,000 years ago. You can't outrun God because he loves you that much. We also learned that God is generous with his grace and thorough with his discipline. Once again, not out of any kind of punishment, but because he loves us that much. That he will not let us go down a road of turmoil, distress, ruin of our lives, and not do something to get our attention. He just loves you too much for that. And we also learned that God listens to the desperate cry of desperate people in desperate circumstances. No matter if it's the 100th second chance, the 1,000th second chance, he listens. No matter where you've run, how long you've run, what you're running to or running from, God still listens. Those things that, just those last three slides that came up, I want to ask you now just to think about those things. As I want you to listen to a song we're going to play here, and if you want to read the lyrics on the screen, you can do that, or you can just close your eyes while we're at, and just think of the things we've talked about. Let's listen.
Why are you striving these days? Why are you trying to earn grace? Let me lift up your face. Just don't turn away. Why are you looking for love? Why are you still searching as if I'm not enough? To where will you go, child? Tell me, where will you run? To where will you run? 'Cause I'll be by your side wherever you fall in the dead of night. Whenever you call, and please don't fight these hands that are holding you. If my hands are holding. Look at these hands at my side. They swallowed the grave on that night when I drank the world's sin so I could carry you in and give you life. I wanna give you life. And I'll be by your side.
So my request today is it's just what God has given to us all. Stop running. Just give up our time of running. Whatever you're running from, or I know you're running from God, whatever you're running to, give it up. And let God take you where you're at and bring you back to where you should be. We're going to stand together and sing, and I just pray. If somebody's here that has a decision to make, that you'll do it now. Let's stand and sing.